Welcome, everybody. Thanks for coming out this afternoon. My name is Matt Milner. I'm a consultant and also an instructor for Pluralsight. You may have seen our booth out there. We do developer training, primarily online these days. So online courses you can watch whenever you want, everything Microsoft and beyond. We've got a lot of open source content that we're adding to the library as well. So I think we're over 200 classes now online, everything from Silverlight and HTML5 to some Windows 8 courses already, and of course my favorite, BizTalk, Workflow, AppFabric is out there as well. So there's my contact information, and we're going to be talking today about all those great technologies, BizTalk, Windows Server AppFabric, and Windows Azure AppFabric. And my goal through this session is, one, to introduce you to these three technologies, these three application platform components, and two, help you understand what differentiates them. There's a lot of questions about, okay, well, now we have this AppFabric thing. What does that mean about BizTalk? Or now we have this cloud thing. What does that mean about on-premise? How are these things the same? How are they different? How do I use them? So the goal is to kind of first talk about them as individual pieces. You know, what is BizTalk Server? What is it good for? What does it do? What does it enable you to do? What is Windows Server AppFabric? You know, what does it provide for you in terms of tools, in terms of developer resources? And then what is the Windows Azure AppFabric? But then I also want to step back and talk about them not as siloed individual components and thinking about, okay, I have an application, it has to be BizTalk. That's it. I want to talk about how these things now can leverage each other, how you can combine these technologies together in ways that helps you build more robust, more scalable, and maybe just more interesting applications, bridging both the on-premise and the cloud. So before we kind of dive in and talk about these technologies, how many folks today are using BizTalk? That's more than it would have been a year or so ago, handful of people. How many of you are using AppFabric on Windows Server? Wow, zero. Which is funny because BizTalk Server costs thousands of dollars and AppFabric is free. What about Windows Azure AppFabric? Anybody using the cloud pieces? One, okay. All right. Did folks see, how many people went to Scott Guthrie's talk about Windows Azure? A couple, okay. Perfect, you picked the right session. Excellent. Kudos to you, pat yourselves on the back. We did a good job. So let's start then talking about these three components. We're going to talk a little about BizTalk, about Server AppFabric, and Azure AppFabric. And my goal, like I said, is when you leave, you'll hopefully understand what each of them does, what they're good at, how you can leverage them independently, and how you can leverage them together. So we'll start with the big one, with BizTalk. This is Microsoft's server product. It's been around for years now. We're on BizTalk Server 2010 is the current version. It started way back with BizTalk Server 2000. So we've gone through some rewrites, some re-architecture. It's deployed in, I think now the number is about 10,000 different environments around the world. And what BizTalk provides you is, you can call it a number of things, right? Enterprise app integration, business process management, service-oriented architecture, whatever the name of the day is, right? But at the end of the day, BizTalk's goal and its primary purpose is to help you connect systems to integrate your business. Right. How many of you today have more than one system that needs to talk to another system? Okay, I thought I might get a few hands on that one. Right. Integration is just a reality today. Whether it's because you buy packaged products and you have to integrate them with your other packaged products or your custom applications, or you buy another company. Right? And they come along with their own applications, their own backends. Or you have a mainframe that's been around for a while and you still use it, you still leverage it. It's a valuable asset, but you maybe don't want to be writing COBOL and RPG. You want to be building websites and building front ends in .NET or using those latest technologies. So integration is a reality, and BizTalk kind of embraces that and says, look, my goal is to enable you to talk to any system that's out there, whether it's a mainframe, a web service, it's FTP, it's a queue, whether it's MSMQ or WebSphere. Right? BizTalk's job is to enable you to talk to all those different things. So you can break that down into kind of two flavors. One would be the ability to talk different transports. Right? I can pick up a file from an FTP server or send a file to an FTP server. Right? Or I can do the same thing with queues or the file system. BizTalk will do it with email. Right? The reality of integration is sometimes the way you get your data is it comes into an email box. Right? BizTalk can pull that data out of the email inbox, pull it in, and let you process it. The second flavor of these connections are not transports like that. They really don't care about the message, but they're application connections. I want to talk to my JD Edwards or my SAP or my Siebel system. I want to talk to my Oracle e-business. Well, that's a slightly different scenario, but basically the same idea. I need to exchange messages with that system. They may have different protocols. They may have particular message formats that they require. And BizTalk is going to help me to communicate with those systems. Now, it does that by acting as a piece of middleware, this integration hub, really, with a set of adapters. The adapters is where BizTalk localizes all that logic and smarts about how do I talk to Oracle, right? How do I talk to a web service with WCF? How do I talk to FTP? So we have a variety of these adapters that we can use to adapt to the different systems. And so one big part of BizTalk is simply I receive some data in, regardless of how I got it, where it came from, I receive some data in, and I need to do something with it. Right? Now, receiving data in might be, well, let's just ask, what kind of data do you guys get in today? How many of you get just XML? One or two people? How many of you are still using EDI? Okay, a few. Flat files, CSV? Pipe delimited. Right. BizTalk can handle all of those. Right. I've had customers that bought BizTalk purely for the fact that they could go and deal with those 12 or 15 different flat file formats and have BizTalk do all the parsing for you, right? Pull all that data out, and then be able to transform that and do other things with it. Right. It has a great engine for dealing with those flat file formats, so you don't have, as many of my customers do, lines and lines of VB code laying around to parse files. But in addition to being able to talk to these different systems and work with these different file formats, we have all of these items here. Right? So the pipelines are where that file parsing and serialization happens. We have transformations, essentially maps. Well, we get the data from one system, it has some of the information we need, but we need to transform it into a different form or structure for another. A customer in our JD Edwards system doesn't look like a customer in this web service we need to call. And those transformations may simply be, you know, structural. I have one structure here and it needs to go here. It may involve simple transformations like concatenating first and last name or splitting them. Or it may be really involved where you need to have code that processes those. Database lookups. Right, I get a customer ID out of this system. I need to be able to map it to the customer ID in the other system. The transformations can handle all of that. And we have rules, and we've got all the kind of the tools you would expect with a server product in terms of monitoring and the hosting and scale out for these things. But at its core, what BizTalk does, as I said, is it receives those messages, and then it has a publish and subscribe model for distributing those messages. So if we go look at an example here, what I have is a BizTalk administration console. So this is a tool that both developers and administrators will use to go out and manage their applications in BizTalk. And so we can go here and see I have an ordering services application. And in that, if we look, I have some things deployed here in terms of schemas. Right? BizTalk is all about XML. Right? Even though it can handle flat files in EDI, when it pulls those in, it parses those into XML, and all the while what's in the system, it can treat those as XML documents. So we have schemas that describe the message structure that allow it to be smart about how to process those things. And then we have our maps that I've built in Visual Studio and deployed out there, and the maps allow me to do those transformations. So I have one where I'm going to map an order out to a billing statement. One system is going to give me an order and a particular structure and data. I need to compute some totals and restructure it and put out a billing statement. So we have those things that we'll develop in Visual Studio, but then we have configuration out here for the system where, you know, BizTalk acts as this black box to everything outside of it. So I want to define receive ports and send ports. How does data come in? How does data go out? But one step beyond that is, all right, I have ins and outs. How do I connect those? Right? How do I make sure that the right messages coming in go out? So I have this orders one-way receive port. So I'm going to receive some messages one way. Underneath that, I have this FTP receive location. So I have this adapter that knows how to talk to FTP. And when I go out to configure it, I get all the configuration that makes sense for FTP. Right? Port number, server, remote folder, what's the file name, mask I should be looking for. So we can see this one's going out to my local server here. So I don't have to depend on too many external things. And it's going to go out and look in the orders folder for anything with a star.xml. And essentially it's going to pick that file up. It's going to pull that FTP location. And it's going to bring it into BizTalk server. Well, BizTalk's going to use this pipeline, this processing then, to review that, to figure out, based on the XML, what the message schema is. We're going to pull that in. But more importantly, as we look at the send ports, remember, I'm going to get an order, but I need to actually send it out as a billing statement. All right, so I've got one system kicking things out to me, essentially publishing them, and I have other systems that are interested in that message. So BizTalk provides me a publish and subscribe model, where on this send port now, I can create what's called a subscription. So, oh, well, when a message gets published, if it has these characteristics, you should give it to me. Right? If it has a particular message type, so if it's that XML that matches that schema, and if it came in through this particular port. And as we're processing these things, we can map them. So at the basic level, we have the ability to pick these messages up. I'm going to parse it. I'm going to map it. And then I have multiple subscribers for this message. So if we go to this orders queue, we can see this now is going to send a message out to MSMQ. The configuration's slightly different. I'm going to give it queue-related properties. But I have the same kind of subscription. Slightly different. Here I've said I want that particular message type. I don't care how it gets in the system. Right? If anybody publishes this kind of message, I should put it in this queue. So if we take a look at what happens then, I get down to my folders here. So I have this order. We'll pop that up. We can see the customer ID is Alfke, or one of our favorites from Northwind. Yes, I'm still using Northwind. And we have a couple of items here, all right, quantity and SKU. And I'm going to take that, and I'm going to drop it out into my FTP route here and hope that my BizTalk is actually, my service is running. Should see that disappear. He says with confidence, even though it's not going away. Let's make sure that is running. Oh, there it goes. All right. So, we picked up a message from FTP. It was XML, and it had a particular structure. What we got on the other side, flat file, right? And notice that a lot of the data that was in the original file isn't here. Right? We had a customer ID, and we had some products and SKUs. As we transformed that message coming through, we took the customer ID and did a database lookup to get the customer's name, the billing contact's name and address. We did some computation in our transformation, our map, to figure out, based on those products and their unit price, this is what the total is going to be, because that's all we care about for the billing statement. So we did that transformation, we did that mapping with all these lookups and computations, but we also then, when we sent it, said, hey, we need to serialize this out to a flat file because that's what that system understands. In this case, it's a delimited file or some delimited items with commas. BizTalk handles positional files and tags and all that good stuff as well. But we also have over here in the queue, we have a couple messages because I sent one earlier, I'm guessing. We go look at this guy. Not as fun to look at. But we've sent out to MSMQ, and you can kind of see if you look in there, we've got an order XML. So in this case, we picked up that order, when it came in, we still had a subscriber, we sent it to some system, but we didn't have to do any transformations. Right? So we've got all these different points where we can pick and choose how we handle that message. All right. So that's kind of a very quick introduction to the base of BizTalk, right? Enabling me to connect to these systems. Now, in addition to connection, what else do we have to deal with when we talk to a particular system? Are they all open, unsecure? Anybody can access your ERP? No, they all have different security, they have different credentials, they have different kinds of security. Right? Some are username and passwords. BizTalk has built into it the notion of single sign-on, where you can connect up to those systems and use credentials that are stored in an encrypted database. And you could even do that on a per-user level. If I submit something to BizTalk under a particular Windows user context, right? So if I hit a web service endpoint or I go in through HTTP and I'm using Windows authentication, you can set up BizTalk to identify me, and then tomorrow when it talks to that back-end system, it can look up a set of mapped credentials from that credential store and log into that system as me. So you get full auditing on the back-end system, full security and permissions and all that good stuff. Now, the last thing I'll say about BizTalk is that in addition to all of those pieces, and what I didn't really call out here is we also have the notion of orchestration or workflow. All right, it's not always message comes in, send it here, here, and here. All right, so message comes in, send it to the system, wait for a response, make some decisions based on the response, and then we have a variety of things to do. We have business process that goes along with that. And BizTalk provides you the engine for defining the process, for executing those long-running processes, managing message correlation, and all those good things. All right. Questions on BizTalk before I take the next step? Yeah. Excellent question. So do we have a visual representation of the connection? The short answer is no. So all those ports that I had, today, there isn't anything that ties them together because the subscription for those ports can be based on any number of different pieces. So a message coming in through a particular receive port, there's really no way to know at design time or looking at the configuration where it will go because the messages are dynamic, which means that the data available would be dynamic and you won't really know where those things could go at runtime. With the orchestration, that designer is a visual designer. You can see the business process. You can actually debug those things, or you can use tracking to go back and look and see, I was in this business process. I can see I sent a message out, and then I'm stuck on this step. So that is visual. That is something that you can track and see historically and with current items. But the actual just connections of the ports is something they've tried to do over time. But because it's so dynamic, it's almost impossible to connect them based on the configuration alone. No. All right. So the next tool is Windows Server App Fabric. All right. This was released, 2 years ago now, I think. And it's Windows Server, not to be confused with the Windows Azure App Fabric. They picked the same name because there are plans to have them align. But they are currently different things. So the Windows Server App Fabric is all about WCF and workflow or workflow services. How many of you are using WCF? More hands than flat files. Okay. How many of you are using workflow services? 1, 2, 3. Okay. So the preferred host from Microsoft's perspective, certainly, and for a lot of customers, for a WCF service or a workflow service, right? Now I'll just call them services, is IIS, right? Or Windows Activation Service, however you want to look at it. Right? Now, how many of you enjoy working with the XML configuration for WCF services? No hands? Nobody? How many, let's go one step further, how many of your admins and the people that manage your data center A, would like that, and B, would you feel comfortable saying, oh, just go edit this in this XML configuration file? Right? They hate you when you do stuff like that, and you really don't want to give somebody directions for a deployment or a change that says, oh, go change this XML file. Right? Uh-huh.
That automates the bindings for the VCF adapter.
Oh, so you said there's an XML preprocessor on CodePlex that helps you automate the, is it more kind of a mapping at deployment time? Yeah. So that would certainly be helpful. But if you think about going out and setting up, for example, in your production environment, oh, I've got this WCF service deployed, we're having some trouble with it, I just want you to turn on the WCF monitoring and message logging. Now, if you give them the little tool from the SDK, the UI tool, you could walk them through a few clicks and it wouldn't be too bad. But lots of places don't want an SDK tool on their production servers. And even then, you run some risks of what's going to happen there. So the goal with Windows Server App Fabric is this. Add tooling to make it easier to manage and monitor and configure your services in IaaS. Right? It's not a different host. It's not a new container for your services. They're still in IaaS. Right? But the tooling is there to make it easier to do that monitoring and to do that configuration. And it all builds on top of the .NET framework and what's already there in WCF and workflow. So that's what you see on the right is this server app fabric hosting a bunch of services. All right, we've got web servers out there that are calling into this. They're web services. You may have clients calling them directly as well. And we've got these two databases down in the bottom right there, the monitoring and state. Well, the state database is essentially the workflow persistent store, right? With a couple of added tables and stored procs that AppFabric puts in there. The monitoring store is a custom database that AppFabric instantiates or initializes and sets up, and that's where it will store historical data about WCF calls, exceptions, completions, duration, all the kind of monitoring data that you might want to collect over time and be able to go out and see, but also all the workflow tracking events. Right? Windows Workflow version 4 only comes with one tracking service, and it's the Enterprise Trace for Windows tracking service. Everything gets written to ETW. So out of the box, Windows Workflow doesn't have SQL tracking. It won't store your monitoring information off in SQL. AppFabric adds that in. Right? Essentially, we'll watch the workflows, it'll watch that ETW trace, and it'll write that information for you into this monitoring store. So we have these databases, we've got these this service that's going to help you collect the monitoring, and the tools really come into play by extending existing tools. Right? What do you use to manage stuff that's deployed in IIS? IIS Manager. Right? You might also be using PowerShell if you're doing command line based, or you want to do script based management of these things, you might be using PowerShell. Rather than reinvent the wheel and create a new dashboard for AppFabric, they just integrate it into these two tools. Oh, I should mention here on the left, there's another component of AppFabric. If you install it, there's the caching component. It used to be called Velocity. That exists on-premise. There's also a cloud version. I'm not going to talk about that here because it doesn't necessarily relate directly to the messaging and the AppFabric pieces. But it is something that you can leverage from any application to cache data and store it there in a distributed cache on a cache cluster. So that is also part of Server App Fabric. So as we look at Server App Fabric, then we have IIS and Windows, of course. We have the .NET framework. Right? It already provides in Workflow Framework, or Workflow Foundation, we have tracking. We've got tracing. WCF has all sorts of tracing built in, all this diagnostic pieces. WCF has message logging. Right? We can log the entire message out to trace. We've got the persistence. All right? It's all there in the framework, and we also have a routing service that we're going to look at a little bit later. And so AppFabric kind of sits in the middle here in terms of the runtime and says, well, I'm going to create those runtime databases. I'm going to extend the state database a little bit. We'll still leverage the core persistence and then provide two services that are going to run in the background. And by services here, since it's a completely overloaded term, I mean Windows services, Windows NT services. Right? The event collection service gets all that tracking data, puts it in the monitoring database. The workflow management service helps monitor those long-running workflows for you and kickstart them if they need it. Right. Well, this one started on server A. Looks like server A is gone. All right. That workflow still has work to do. it'll help bring it up on server B for you. All right? So it's something that's actively running and can monitor those things and catch those things for you. And then the main thing that you'll deal with is the tools. All right? So you'll work with the tools to go in and configure these services and manage those things. So if we go in here and look at IIS, we've got the default website. And when I install AppFabric, I get this nice AppFabric section at the top with the dashboard, the endpoints, and the services. Now, because I'm at the site, I go to services, I get all the services that are deployed on the site. Right? And so I can see the application pool, the site name, I can get the virtual path to those things in there. Oops, it doesn't like that old service. Go to that one, all right, double click, I get a nice configuration dialog for that particular service. Now, it's all context aware, so if I drill down in here and go down, say, to this orders query, and I do services, I just get the services that are in that particular directory. So when I come in and do manage WCF and WF services, I get a dialog. Again, this is context sensitive, so if I do it at the machine level, the site level, or the application level, I get the ability to configure my services and my service host. I have this little checkbox, enable metadata over HTTP. What do you suppose that does if I check or uncheck that box? For those of you who are using WCF. Yeah, it enables that WSDL population. It's essentially a behavior in the WCF configuration. I could go into the XML and I could configure that. But we want to avoid that, right? So if we pull this up, so this is our, we're on the site. This is our orders query. Let's go explore that. We'll find it. Go down here and find our behaviors. We'll see, right? Service metadata, HTTP get enabled equals true. And of course, if we go in here, my window go away. And we turn that off, it's telling me, hey, you're changing the web config, I'm going to recycle things. All that's doing is changing that config slightly to false. So it's a really little thing, especially when it's just a checkbox like that. But let's go a step further. Let's go to our service now. We can change the workflow persistence. So here we can go in and we can specify things like, do you want to encode the instances? Do you want to keep those instances after completion? Right? What should happen if there's failures? All this stuff is split between a number of different WCF behaviors for hosting workflow services. If you have to change several of these by hand, you're going to have to go in that XML file and change those particular values. Right? You have to know which behavior to go to, which setting to change. We've got some other pieces there. This is the big one. This is the selling point for me. Right? You want to go tell that administrator to go out and change something. Here's the monitoring. Right now it's doing this end-to-end monitoring. Well, I want to do troubleshooting. Just slide that up to troubleshooting for me. Right? That changes our trace switch. It basically changes how much information we're going to start collecting through the trace for this particular application. And the admin person doesn't need to know anything about config, right? They just need to know what to go set this to. Now, if I hit default, it's going to go up the tree, essentially. It's going to use a cascading web config model and just take whatever's above that. Now, we'll go out and configure tracing. And we'll turn it on to warning. Warning. Hey, tracing, trace file name. All right, where do we want to put this? Why not in the WDEB root? Right. Trace SVC log, right? And we can go and do the same thing for message logging. All right, log it transport, log malformed, give them a file. So here we're a step forward, right? If we go look at what this does to our messages or to our config, inetpub, wwwroot message.servicelog. Let's hit OK. Where did my folder go? I don't think this is going to let me drag it. Oh, it did. That's a little better. So, in our service model, get rid of that and that. Look, we've got our services, behaviors, and we've got these extensions. Notice we've got diagnostics down here. So, it added all this stuff in when they picked that. And then, now we've got all this tracing stuff that got added in. Right? So, that's the kind of stuff you don't want to have to tell somebody to go put in your config file. You want to tell them, look, I can give you screenshots, couple of pieces in the UI. It's a supported tool. It's not an SDK tool. Here's how I want you to turn the monitoring on. Right? They can set up so that these tracing files go onto a share that the developers have access to, or they can dump them on the server and then go move them where you can get access to them. You can use your trace viewer from the WCF tools in the SDK, and you can actually drill down and see, oh, we've got a problem down in the core, right? Some sort of security token issue. I've run into it before where the time was off on one machine from the other by more than 5 minutes. Security error that doesn't surface until you get into the tracing, right? So how many of you still think if you gave your person a Word document, screenshots, check those boxes, that either they'd be unhappy or it wouldn't get done quite right? Well, you have a lot of confidence. I like that. But we'll make it a little bit easier. I'm going to import a module into PowerShell. I'm going to import this application server module. I'm going to look at all the commands in there. So I'm going to get command, and the module is application server. You can see that when I install AppFabric, I get all of these commands now that I can use from PowerShell, either in a script or interactive like this, that match up to everything you just saw me do in the user interface. So you want to enable monitoring and the tracelog file and all that stuff? You can do a command in PowerShell, or you can give them a script. All right, so now it's not, I want you to follow this handwritten script with screenshots. It's, I want you to go to run that script we have in production to turn on tracing. Right? Or I want you to go run that script now, we've collected it, go turn off the tracing and go back to the regular health monitoring levels. Right? So you can have these scripts, you can have them pre-written, tested out in your test environments, sitting on the machine, and they can go double-click, run that thing, and have that work. So we could do something like, we'll do site, just to give you a sense, default website. Right? So I can go out and get all the services that are out there running on that particular site or even the virtual path down in there. I can manipulate those things as well. How many of you have used PowerShell? Excellent. All right. So you know that all these things are .NET objects. All right. In PowerShell, it's an object. I can set properties, invoke methods, do all that good stuff. They've brought all that, all those objects in here to AppFabric. Questions on the Windows Server App Fabric? We'll come back in a minute and talk about using it with other things. But no? Okay. So we have Server App Fabric, and now we talk about Windows Azure App Fabric. All right. What's this App Fabric thing out in the cloud? Well, it's still about the same sorts of things, services and caching, but in a much different way. Right? When we're on premise, when we're on our servers, we're thinking about hosting those, monitoring tools, and other things. The Windows Azure App Fabric has three different components. You see two of them here. One is the service bus. And I like to think of the service bus as an internet relay, right, for messages that's secure and that allows me to deal with firewall issues very nicely. A lot of you said you do integration. Anybody have to integrate across firewalls with partners or third parties? Couple of you ever have that finger pointing where something goes wrong with your private VPN and no, it's your fault. No, it's your fault. And oh, you changed something. No, we didn't change anything. Right? The service bus is about avoiding all of that. I don't want a private VPN with you that we set up and manage. What I want is something like this where I sit behind my firewall on the left and I connect up to the service bus and ask it to listen for messages. You, behind your firewall, go then and send a message to that public endpoint, right? Because now you're going out through your firewall. You're not trying to let something in. You're going out, which is often much less restrictive. And you're not trying to come directly into my environment through my firewall, because that's not going to happen. You're trying to talk to a public endpoint. So I establish a connection to the service bus. It starts listening. You send a message to the bus on that endpoint, and the service bus relays it back down to me. Now I can get it because I first went out through my firewall as well. All right, so we're both essentially going out, and then the channel is established and the messages get relayed. Now the nice thing is, secure. All right, I can have the messages be encrypted. I can require security on that endpoint in the service bus. So you have to have a particular set of credentials to listen, and you also have to have a particular set of credentials to send. All right, so not just anybody can drop stuff out there and start doing a denial of service on you. The service bus has to deal with that, right? So the security comes in with the second component of App Fabric, which is the access control service, right? It is what is known as a security token service. All right, it kind of serves two purposes. One is it holds certain types of credentials. You can think of those as username and passwords or certificates. But it also does transformation. So one example, I want to access my website, or I want to let you access my website. I don't want to worry about keeping a user store. So I'm going to use the access control service to say, look, if somebody logs in to the access control service, authenticates with Windows Live ID, give me their email address. Right? That's good enough. If they have a Live ID, I can kind of uniquely identify who they are, and I know returning customers. That's okay with me, right? I don't need a separate login mechanism, or Yahoo, or what's the other one, or Facebook, or one of those things. Or I've got, my partner has their own Active Directory. They can federate through here, right? So now I can set it up so you can log in with your Windows credentials, right? Go through this access control service, and I don't care if you're from partner A, partner B, partner C, you all look the same coming in. Right, you all have the same set of claims and security information that might involve your company name or other things I need to differentiate, but I don't have to program against you and you and you. Right? Everybody has the same kind of security token when they come in. So the access control service helps us secure that. As I mentioned, we also have caching out there. So now when you have applications out in the cloud, you can use the caching service as well for distributed caching out there. Now, one of the key things I want you to remember about the service bus is you don't host your service out there. Right? This isn't the core Windows Azure piece. You don't pick up a WCF service and put it on the service bus. It's just a listener. It's a relay for messages going through. You don't actually put code there. Now, you could put a service in Windows Azure, but you would just put that in, right, an IIS running out there, a regular old web role, a regular Windows Azure compute. This is purely about relaying messages. All right, how are we doing on time? Okay. So I've got a simple service here, just to show you an example. It's an HTTP-enabled service, so you can hit it just by doing a web get to come out and hit this service. If you come to /tasks, right, it invokes this particular operation on here and returns a set of tasks. Not very exciting, but it's a service. And I've got a little breakpoint in there. Now I'm going to start this and hope that all my internet connectivity is going to stay strong throughout. So I'm going to do localhost. You can see I hit my debug point, so I'm in my service now getting back tasks. Oh, Internet Explorer, how I love you. Won't show me the XML, but there it is. Let's make that a little bigger so you can see it. So I have an array of tasks. I have a task item. It's assigned to Matt. Right? HTTP get, I was able to grab that data back over here. Well, that's just a local service, right? What if I want you to be able to access that thing, but I'm, who knows what firewalls are between me and you right now? Different networks and going through the cloud. And so I want to expose that out on the service bus. Well, the service bus SDK gives me all the tools I need to essentially do this. When I host my service, I know you guys said you love the WCF configuration. I won't make you watch me type it, but you have to look at it a little bit. Right? All of this, adding this endpoint, takes my service now and publishes it on the service bus. So now that my service is hosted, it's actually sitting out there, and you could go out and hit this endpoint. See if I can get it without clicking and or moving it. So now we'll go out. So now we're hitting azurefundamentals.servicebus.windows.net/tasks/http/tasks. Probably still won't give me the XML. But I'm hitting my breakpoint. I just went out and hit a public URL sitting out there on that service bus. It relayed it down to my machine sitting here in the center behind whatever firewalls, and it's running my implementation here locally, i.e. still not going to cooperate, and there's my array of tasks. Right? So if any of you have, let me see if I have that on here. This up. And if you have a, does anybody, nobody's got their laptop open. You guys are all listening and attentive. But if you did, you could go out and you could hit this URL and you could pull back the tasks. It would run on my machine. Right? That's what I mean when I talk about the service bus being a relay. It's not about my code living out in Microsoft servers. They still live on my servers. But it gives me an access point that's publicly available that means you don't have to come through my firewall initially to get to it and allows us to relay those messages through. Right? As I understand it this morning, I think Scott Guthrie set up an endpoint out there and he was allowing people to send stuff in. He got all sorts of really nice comments on his coming in on his service. So if I go out to the root here on the service bus, I go out to my namespace, Azure Fundamentals. That's what I signed up for, my subscription. I kind of own that little piece of the service bus. So azurefundamentals.servicebus.windows.net, I get a nice service discovery item that tells me, hey, here's all the services that you have publicly listed as being available here. So people can come out and they can see the different services that are available. I can give it a name, and here it gives me the root address. So it says tasks HTTP, which is the root address of my service. But you actually have to go in and hit tasks, right, to get some data back. Eventually that'll hit, and we'll go back out there. So what I did to enable that, as I said, is just in that config file, I added that in. But notice I've got a special binding, this web HTTP relay binding. That's a binding, a WCF binding that knows how to talk to the service bus. Right? And I set up some configuration for this thing. So I had to set up on the binding the security. I said, well, I want to use transport. I want everything to go over SSL for my highly sensitive tasks that I have here. But the relay client authentication type is none. Right? You don't have to provide credentials to access this service. So you determine whether it's publicly available or it requires security on there. And then I have settings for the registry, that service discovery, so you can identify it if it's public or not. And then I have this behavior for the credentials to provide my username and password, essentially. Right? I have to, if I want to go listen on the service bus, I have to give it some credentials that indicate that I own that address, that's part of my subscription, before it'll let me actually register and start listening out there. Right? So that's a big piece of it, is authenticating in order to listen. And then you choose whether people have to authenticate in order to send as well. All right. So I showed this working with, let's go back up there. I showed this working with just HTTP. Right? It works for SOAP web services as well. You can use WS security, so you can have message-based encryption. So all the way through the service bus, your data is encrypted and secured using those mechanisms. Right?
Both listening to the same endpoint, some kind of polling.
Yeah, and it depends on the transport you use. You can use HTTP or you can use TCP. They require different ports on your firewall going out. Obviously, TCP being a connection-oriented protocol, it's a lot easier for the message to come down a lot quicker. If you're using HTTP, obviously they've optimized that as much as possible so that when you create that connection, they're still sending it back down. But I haven't heard anybody run into issues with, when we go through the service bus, there's a too much delay caused by the polling. The delay you might see is, the message has to go from here to the cloud to here, right? So there's going to be a delay as opposed to if they could talk directly to each other. But that delay is actually really primarily dependent on the network, right? How fast is the network through, not so much the service bus itself, because when it gets those messages, right, they've built it to scale out on the Windows Azure backbone and handle all that load and stuff as well. Yep. All right. Okay, so we have these three big things that we've looked at. We've got BizTalk Server, great for integration, for talking to a variety of systems, for dealing with all the mess we think about with integration. Different file formats, different security, transformation, message routing, all those sorts of things. And then we have AppFabric, which is all about hosting WCF services on-premise in IIS and just making that easier to do. And we have the Azure Service Bus. So I said we look at those standalone, but really the power of those things come in when we put them together. So we think about just on-premise now. We're not even, no cloud, right? Still just, not looking future, not looking at the cloud, just what do we have today on the server? We have BizTalk and we have AppFabric. Now, does anybody know, I know we only had a couple people, what's one of the biggest asks, one of the biggest customer requests for BizTalk server in terms of the messaging?
Low latency,
right on the nose. All right, low latency. BizTalk is publish and subscribe. A message comes in, it has to get written to a SQL database, right? It has to then get sent out. BizTalk guarantees message delivery. Right? If they say they have it, it's in SQL, right? It's been stored to disk. And so there's some latency there. You get all sorts of benefits from that latency, but as people start building out solutions, that's one of the things that come up is, gosh, I love it, all the pieces, but can we just skip that part where you put it in the database? I'll trade off the guarantees of message reliability for some low latency. Well, one of the nice things about WCF and workflow services is you can have low latency, right? You don't have that requirement of persisting the messages to SQL. And so we think about, well, what can we do here? Well, we've got BizTalk. It's great at talking to all these various systems and things. We can use that. It's got the long-running process and the host scale out and all those things. And we have AppFabric, which can host our workflow services. Those workflow services are really good at doing things like just composing multiple service calls. Right? So I might have a scenario where I have a client, and the client has a variety of different things it needs to do. Well, we need to place orders. Okay, placing orders involves maybe a BizTalk orchestration that has to go out, talk to the mainframe system, maybe has to talk to a billing system and check some things. So we have a whole process involved there that doesn't necessarily have to be low latency, right? They're placing an order. It may even be a one-way kind of operation, but it doesn't have to be low latency. But that same client application might also then want to come and query the orders through a service call, which we really don't want to have to do through BizTalk, right? We're essentially doing a kind of one-to-one connection of, I'm going to call a web service maybe. It's going to go into BizTalk. It's going to call a back-end system, and then I'm going to get the result back. Right? That's where you really want the low latency. And so with AppFabric, then, we could say, well, let's leverage AppFabric to do the low latency call. When you want to call in and query orders, that particular workflow service can do that work for you with the low latency. It can even go out and call multiple services in parallel and aggregate that data back together. Right? And so that's nice, but we don't want the client to have to make that decision. Right? We don't want the client necessarily to have to say, this is a low latency. That goes here, and this is here. I have multiple services to call. And so we can leverage BizTalk and AppFabric and take advantage of the WCF4 introduction of the routing service, right? Where the routing service will take a WCF message run a set of rules or filters that we define, and then it will route it to various endpoints. Right? So let's look at that scenario real quick. I've got my got my BizTalk over here. So I have, I didn't set up an orchestration for this, but I have a BizTalk scenario where we can send in our orders. Excuse me. We can send in our orders. So if we look at our BizTalk solution, you can see we've got our orders receive. That's just a WCF endpoint listening on TCP. Right. It's a request reply, but it's BizTalk. BizTalk knows how to use WCF. It's going to listen for a web service call to receive that message in. And then it's going to send it out in this system through a WCF SQL adapter, essentially, and send that stuff over to SQL. Now, I use SQL because that's what I have installed, but you could plug in any of those kind of application adapters that I mentioned before, right? JD Edwards or SAP or Oracle eBusiness, any of those things would fit there. Right? I want to talk to some back-end system. And so I have that that BizTalk service, that endpoint listening, that'll take the orders and put them into my backend system, my SQL. But I also have a workflow service here, this order query service, that is a WCF service. It's a workflow service. So it'll receive a WCF call, and then it's going to go out, and it's going to get the customer details. All right, so it's doing a query. In this case, it only has to go to one particular place. But the nice thing is, I'm going to use that same SQL adapter. When I'm in workflow now, the new adapters that Microsoft has been releasing for those line of business systems aren't just BizTalk adapters. They can be used by BizTalk, but they can also be used by SharePoint. They can be used by Windows Workflow. They can be used in your .NET code. They make those line of business systems look like WCF services or web services. So from my workflow, I can talk to a back-end system. I can also run a big BizTalk map within my Windows workflow. Right? So we're starting to see we can leverage what these things are really good at. All right, BizTalk's really good at guaranteed delivery, adapting to all these different systems and file formats. WCF workflow services are really good at the low latency and talking web services. Now we can add in some of the adapter pieces from BizTalk. So maybe we expand what AppFabric can do. And we start adding in the mapping capabilities here. And again, we start expanding some of the features of what we can do in AppFabric. Right? So these are all part of BizTalk with 2010. You can install the adapter pack and you get the mapping activities. You get the ability to use those adapters in your workflow. Right? So I have these two distinct services, but I want the client to be able to just call an endpoint and not worry about or think about AppFabric versus BizTalk, right? I just want to give them a web service. And so that's where we throw in the routing service, right? So if we kind of switch back here, right, that's this guy. We've got our BizTalk process exposed as a web service. We've got our separate AppFabric process exposed as a web service. We want the client to see it as one service and have one endpoint that it goes to talk to. So if we go into our server here, the routing service, you'll notice in this project, there is no SVC file, there's no service. I'm not actually writing a service. I'm just configuring an out-of-the-box WCF service. So if we look up here, I have a where'd it go? I have a service, orders.svc, and what I'm hosting for the type is this routing service. And the routing service allows me to apply filters to those requests coming in. So it has two client endpoints defined, right, sitting in the middle. So it says, oh, I'm going to be a client to AppFabric or to BizTalk. And then it has a routing table definition down here. So we're going to look at the SOAP action of that incoming request. We're going to say, oh, well, if it's get orders for customer, right, that's one. And if it's submit order, that's a different filter here. So I have a query filter and a submit filter. So I've got endpoints that I can talk to, I've got filters, and then I have my matches between those two. Right? If this filter returns true, right, if it's a query essentially, then I want you to route it to that endpoint for App Fabric. Right? Take the request message as it came in, send it over to that service. When you get a response, reply. Right? If it's a submit order, well, then in that case, take it over here and send it to BizTalk. And whatever reply you get back, send it to the client. So the client is kind of oblivious of the fact that we've got multiple systems on the back end here. So we'll start this up and go to our orders. So if we go search for some existing ones, I think we have some for our friends, AlfKey. Right? Request is going to the routing service. It sees it's a request for these orders, calls the App Fabric service. It looks the data up, in this case in SQL, returns a response, and we get back the orders for AlfKey. Right? And it'll probably be a little faster now that everything's warmed up. Yep. So we can do that. Now I can go create an order. Right? So today's the 16th. Do Greel. Do another one of those. Right. So we go out and create the order. Now it's gone out. The routing service sees that it's a create order, sends it to BizTalk. Right. BizTalk can now take that message, call the back-end system, submit the order, and get a response back out. So if we go back over, we should have one more now for Greel, and we do. 11099, right, is the order. So you can leverage App Fabric for your low latency. You can leverage BizTalk for a lot of that connectivity, the processing of different files, excuse me, the single sign-on, all those things that it provides. But what this also points out is we're starting to see some of these feature sets mixing. Right? First we had BizTalk can do WCF. Now we've got App Fabric can do, the workflows, can do maps, can use these adapters. So we're starting to see these things come together. But you still may have those cases where you want to use them for those different purposes, low latency versus the guaranteed message delivery. Right. Questions about that one? About what happened there, what didn't happen? No? Yeah. Excellent question. He said, well, here I use that WCF router to decide App Fabric versus BizTalk, but BizTalk already has all sorts of routing in terms of the publish and subscribe. Couldn't I send it into BizTalk and have it decide where it goes? Absolutely. Right? BizTalk could be that the first place that the message goes, and you could use the publish and subscribe to send it to one or more places. And one of those places could be App Fabric. It's just a web service that your BizTalk system is calling. Yep. You could absolutely do that. The reason I did it this way is because I wanted to use App Fabric alone. Right? I didn't want to involve BizTalk in that low latency query. I wanted to just use App Fabric, so I used the router instead. But absolutely, you could have BizTalk be that main entry point, use all of its routing logic and mapping and the pipeline support to take those messages and route them where you want them to go, including to an App Fabric service or to a service bus endpoint. And actually kind of showing that with the pink arrow there, right? You can have back and forth between those two just because a message gets routed to one or the other. All right, let's look at two scenarios for kind of bridging to the cloud now. We've got BizTalk on-premise, and we have the service bus out there. Well, BizTalk does great at talking to all of our mainframe and our other line of business applications in here. But again, when we get into integration, a lot of times we need the ability for somebody to come in and send data into that BizTalk system. Right? We don't want to open up those private VPNs and do all that stuff, so we can leverage the service bus. Right? What do we need for the service bus? WCF and the service bus SDK. Right? I exposed that simple task service very easily as a WCF endpoint. BizTalk knows how to do WCF endpoints, so we should be able to have it listen on the service bus. Then we can have clients that are calling from behind their own firewalls. We can have BizTalk calling services either out in the cloud or at our partner sites by going through the service bus. Leave that up. So if we go look at our BizTalk server, I've got a receive location here, and you can see I have this cloud orders receive. If we go look at that, I'll configure it. So it's a WCF endpoint. And if you look, it's listening out on Windows Azure, on the service bus. All right, its endpoint address is simply out there. I've got this BTS ordering. And just like I configured it in a XML file, I can configure it here. Right? So I have the binding. Is this net one-way relay binding? Again, a relay binding, meaning service bus aware. And I have all of those same settings. So I have the transport as security. I've got the message. And then, if we go into the behaviors, we'll find my username and password out there as well. Right. So the same things I configured in an XML file, BizTalk surfaces all that up through a UI. Right. But it's still a WCF endpoint. It's still out listening to the service bus. So we can see it's enabled. It's out there. If we go look at that endpoint, our Azure Fundamentals endpoint, you can see it's listed out there as a public endpoint. It's available. It's up and listening. My tasks endpoint has gone away because I shut that down. But this one is out there and available. So if I go to my orders and cloud, give Alfke some love there. If we go look, what this orders web is going to do, if we go look at our cloud repository, this is going to create an order based on that information. It's going to create a proxy out to that cloud endpoint, and it's going to send the message. Right? Now, in this case, because it's BizTalk, I don't have to have a typed proxy. I'm just going to create a message based on the XML there and send that over. So if we look at our config then, that cloud client, right here, we've got that matching address. So my web app is going out to the relay to send the message. The relay is going to send it back down into BizTalk. It's my one-way message. We should have a new order over here in our billing. In fact, we do. So there we got Maria this time instead of whoever we got last time with. Oh, we got Maria again. Here I thought I was doing it different. So we've got a message now that came through BizTalk. Right? And BizTalk didn't care where it came from. Right? It came in through a receive location. One time I picked it up from FTP. Another time it came in off the service bus. BizTalk doesn't care. Right? It's a message that came in, transformed it, sent it out to all the subscribers on the other end. Right? BizTalk is like the honey badger, right? It just doesn't care. All right. So this one looks a lot like the last one. Right? It's just the same idea with Windows Server App Fabric. I've got a service hosted in IIS. I want to make it available out in the Azure cloud. I'll set up an endpoint. I'm going to use the service bus to do that. Right? One of the things that App Fabric enables, and at least makes it a little bit easier, is, let me just pull this up so we can see it. I'm running it on this machine because this is Windows 7, and my server is still good old server 2008. So if we look at this guy, and we look at the services, we've got a web service out there. And if we look at the endpoints, you can see I have this basic HTTP relay binding. Right? It's out there in the cloud. Now, what do we know about IIS and how it activates services or web pages, though? Does it do it right when IIS starts up? Does your web app start? No, you have to wait for somebody to make that first request, right? It activates the process on demand. Well, that's not going to work very well for me because I need to be listening out on the service bus before they send me a message, right? And so with IIS, starting with Windows 7, you had the ability to add auto start, right? Where you can tell your application pool to start up automatically, All right, so when IIS starts, start the worker process for my application pool, but we want to go one step further, and we actually want it to go out and ping our service, essentially. All right, we want our web service to start so that when the WCF service host gets created, it can make that connection out to the service bus. And so one of the things that they enable in the App Fabric tooling, I manage the services, is I have this auto start. So at an application level, I can turn that on and say, yes, I want this application to auto start. And it will then tell me and warn me, hey, well, your application pool also needs to be set to auto start. But thankfully, it will do it for me. Right? I'll say, yes, I want auto start. Oh, do you want your application pool to auto start? Yes. So not only is it the WCF configuration file I don't have to dig into, it's the IIS application host config file that I don't have to dig into as well. And I've set this up as custom, so that I can go into individual services in here. Let me configure that individual service. And on the auto start, then I can decide for a particular service whether it needs to be auto started. Right? So the application pool needs to be set to auto start. The application itself, you want to set up to auto start. And then they provide you the workings that go out and get your service hosted. And so you can decide, well, should they just walk through the directory and host everything? Or should they just find those particular items where you've marked them as saying, I want this to be auto-started. So that endpoint is up. It's already out there on our service bus. All right, we can see that. If we go out there, our publicly listed services, there's our expense cloud service that's out there and listed. It's probably going to give me a no authorization. Yep. So this is an example where we have on our client also a requirement to have security. So I don't want just anybody placing orders. So the client configuration is going to look a lot like what I had on the service side. The client's going to have to provide their credentials in order to be able to send messages to my endpoint. Right? Only people that have the right credentials can send me orders or send me expense reports or whatever it is that I might be asking for. So when we look at these bridging these things, right, App Fabric is just WCF. So we simply need to do what we would do for a normal WCF service to listen on the service bus, but we can take advantage of the auto start so it actually works in IIS. So it's a great feature of Windows 7, which you're hopefully not hosting your services on, or Server 2008 R2, that you can do that auto start. With BizTalk, when you want to go out and do this, BizTalk has a WCF publishing wizard where you say, I want to publish a WCF endpoint for BizTalk. And when you install the tools for the cloud, for the Azure stuff, they basically replace the wizard and add a couple of screens so that as you're publishing it, you can check a little box that says, yep, I also want to make it available on the service bus. Here's my credentials. Here's my namespace. Right? And it will go out and create that receive location for you in BizTalk, all set up with the right configuration to listen on the service bus. All right. So hopefully that's given you a sense. We have BizTalk server on-premise for integration. We've got App Fabric for tooling around your web services, your workflow services, and we have the Windows Azure App Fabric to help us with that service bus with message relay across the firewalls and across the internet in a secure fashion. But hopefully your takeaway is that you understand how they're slightly different, but also how you've seen how you can use them together now to deal with those issues of, I want low latency and I want BizTalk. Or I want to take advantage of App Fabric, but I also want it available in the cloud. Or I want my BizTalk to be able to talk to things through the cloud or allow messages to come in through the cloud. So with that, I will wrap up, take any questions that you have. We actually even have a few minutes left for questions. Thank you. Yeah? Let me answer the questions first. I might have horrible answers. Yep. I didn't have to laugh. He laughed. So the question was, is it free? Short answer, no. Longer answer is you can get trial period. So there is just 3-month trial period where you can do all the Azure stuff you want. It's available. You get a bunch of hours through MSDN for development. But the shorter answer for service bus is you get charged based on your usage. And they've changed it recently, so I'm going to get it backwards if I try and remember. They changed it within the last few months, I think. But you get charged based on your usage. So use it a lot, costs more. You use it a little, it doesn't cost as much. But you're talking about very small charges for usage. It's not like a dollar a message or even a penny a message. I mean, they do it in chunks of thousands, what they charge you, and still the fees are very small. Yeah. Yes, sir? Uh-huh. Yes. Right. Yeah, having that guy set up the shared secret. Let me see if I understood the question. Are you asking where that comes from and how they know what to set it to, or are you asking about how are they going to know to set that in the... Shared secret is a fancy way of saying username and password, to be honest. I mean, it's you have an issuer, which in my case was the owner, and you have the secret or the value, and essentially that's it's the same thing as username password for most people. You can, on the access control service, have different issuers that provide those secrets or those keys. You can assign those things different permissions. So, for example, I might set up a custom issuer, that would be my plural site issuer, and then for particular customers, right, I would generate for them particular keys. And so I could say, look, here's your key, and and I'm the issuer. And so then you would have, it's not a username as much, it's, oh, this is the plural site key that I use, and here's the value. And if you pass that value, I can then set up in the access control service, hey, if they came from this issuer, right, and they were authenticated, then I want to give them access to send to this endpoint. Or if they came from this issuer and they were authenticated, then I want to allow them to listen on a particular endpoint. Yeah, you can use certificates as well. Yep. Yeah. Good question. Any monitoring capabilities on the Azure Service Bus? There are some. You may have noticed when I went out and tried to browse to that web service and I didn't have the full path, I got an error message and I had a tracking ID. So there are some capabilities for you, especially if you're doing support calls, to give them tracking IDs. But mostly because it's a relay, most of the issues end up being on one side or the other. And so you're going to get an error back, hopefully, from the service you're calling or you're sending an error back. And it's more about resolving those than the endpoints up there. Beyond that, I have to look to see if they've changed anything in terms of giving you more direct access to monitor that stuff. Yeah. All right, well, we'll wrap it up. I'll stick around for a few minutes if anybody does have questions. Thanks for coming, and enjoy the rest of the show.